From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on January 5th when Governor Cuomo's executive order to, quote, protect the homeless took effect. The idea was to pull the homeless off the street if the temperature got below a certain level, to physically do it by force. And of course, that led to some controversy and some dispute. But you know what often happens? We had a good conversation on this program about it, and then we kind of stopped talking about it. We do that sometimes. We make a connection, and then we lose a connection. And so this hour, we want to revisit how things are going for the providers, for people providing services in various ways to our homeless community. In particular, this hour, we're going to be zeroing in on women and children in crisis, but that doesn't have to be all. And we want to talk about the efforts that are ongoing, not just in the most extreme weather parts of our year, though no one is saying that March is easy. So let me go ahead and welcome our guests now, and we have a lot to talk about. From the Open Door Mission, their executive director is Mike Hennessy. And Mike, it's great to have you back. How are you, sir?
Great to be here. Thanks, Evan.
All right. Also, Anna Valeria Eisman's here. She's the director of the Women and Children's Program at Open Door Mission. Anna, nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
Also here, Reverend Kelly Ayer, the director of the Zion House. And Kelly, why don't you tell us where Zion House is and what it is that you do?
We're in Avon, New York, but still part of the greater Rochester area.
Of course.
It seems a little odd to have a homeless female veterans house in Avon. We're actually equidistant from Batavia, Canandaigua, Syracuse, Buffalo, Bath, and of course we get female veterans all over the country, not just Rochester or the local area.
And you serve how many?
We have 7 beds, and so far we've, since 2010, around 85 female veterans.
Okay, and Melanie Wakacha is an Army veteran and a Zion House graduate and staff member. Melody, nice to have you as well.
Thank you.
And also here is Sister Grace Miller from the House of Mercy. And Sister Grace, nice to see you back here
Thank
as well.
You. Thank you.
Sister, we go back to that January day. We had a lot of conversation about it. How did things go this winter when it came to the governor's order, by the way? I mean, I am totally ignorant on the follow-up on this.
Well, for us at the House of Mercy, things were the same. You know, we still had homeless people coming to us, and really, it didn't have that much of an effect. We still had homeless people coming. So in terms of, you know, the changes, there wasn't much of a change for us.
Your concern, if I remember correctly, was that you understood the spirit of the order, the intention to help people in extreme circumstances, but your concern was doing things physically by force, having police forcibly move people, especially if they didn't want to. Yeah. Did that happen very much? Or did I hate to ask like this, but did police kind of ignore it? Was it kind of forgotten at that point?
Well, what we heard was that the police were really, many of them were sympathetic to the cause, and we didn't hear too much of people being forced, homeless being forced into homeless shelters.
Okay.
There was a sympathy on the part of the police officers, which was good, you know, because we didn't want the homeless to be forced into housing if they didn't want it. So it went pretty well for us, but I think there still is the issue of homelessness that the governor has to address.
Absolutely. Mike, I saw you nodding. What did you see this winter when it came to the governor's order?
We had maybe a half a dozen times when the county outreach folks that were assembled because of the executive order that went out and did some outreach, maybe a half a dozen times they brought a gentleman to us that was willing and wasn't resistant. So we received him even past our normal hours and after midnight a couple times, which is normally not our practice. But again, you know, we wanted to be collaborative and work with the community to solve the problem, and it worked out pretty well. The rest of the time, we did what we always did. We receive anybody that comes that wants to get out of the cold.
Absolutely. Reverend Ayer, did that order affect you at Zion House at all?
No, not at all. The Livingston County utilizes the motel system to put folks up,
all right,
even though we've partnered with them.
Tell me a little bit more about that. How does it work?
They get vouchers to go to local motels and hotels in typically Mount Morris before sending them to more permanent solutions.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about what's going on right now in this community. And everyone's got, you know, slightly different needs, very similar goals, of course. And I want to go around the table with that. And I want to start with Mike Hennessy because, boy, we go back to... Was it, I'm guessing them, was it September? When did this all happen? What happened last year was that Open Door had found a location for a possible long-term residential care facility for, well, Mike, why don't you explain, and Mike and Anna, why don't you explain a little bit more about what happened?
Sure. As an organization, and especially as an independent organization, we determined that one of our goals was to provide a housing program for women and kids because, we have women and kids come to our doors every day. They're in crisis. They need help. If they needed shelter or program, we didn't have one for them, and often we couldn't find an appropriate program or bed for them right away. So we determined if we wanted to service homeless women and children, we decided and have the luxury, because we're independent, we can step back and look at the entire government system and find cracks. And we kept bumping into this very large crack that said there were up to 2,000 homeless kids within the Rochester City School District that fall under homelessness per the McKinney-Vento Act. So they have no permanent address. They may be sleeping in a car with mom. They may be couch surfing with an aunt or grandma. And we thought and we discovered that 42% of the kids K-3 in the school district are chronically absent. Well, we assume that's most of these kids are the guys that you'd see Bolton Vargas out knocking on doors looking to find, because they're registered in his school, but they're not in school and he can't find them. And we thought that if we could work with the folks that lead us to these women and children who were in the district, and if we could have an impact on these families and get them into a programmatic supportive housing program that's 6 to 9 months to a year, depending on how long they needed, get the kids immediately back into school, and shore up the strengths and weaknesses with it's mostly strengths, shore up the weaknesses that mom have, whether it be parenting, counseling, or job training, or GED, or whatever it is that they needed, and then get them to a place where they could have independent living. We found a place that we thought would work really well in the 19th Ward. It was an old Episcopal church on the corner of Post Avenue and Sawyer. And we immediately ran into a strong resistance from the community association, and we were turned down twice by the City Planning Commission to operate there. So we determined, that we needed to find another space, and it was unfortunate. And we actually found a place that is not within the city, that we're being received quite graciously and optimistically, and we're moving forward. And I can't tell you much more than that, other than to say, we think we've found a really safe neighborhood for us to move into.
Not in the city. I assume a local adjoining suburb?
I would say it's a suburb.
Okay. Do you have a sense for the timeline on when you will be able to not only make an announcement on where, but kind of move forward there?
Yeah, based on the way things are going, just the normal checks and balances and zoning board meetings that have to take place, we think that we'll close on the building in the next 3 or 4 months, and we'll be ready to open and do what renovations we need to do. Perhaps by spring or next year. Certainly, we'd like to be operating before next school year, and so we can get kids started off in school that aren't in school next September.
Would a city location be better, or is this going to work out okay, you think?
I think this will work out great.
Okay. I want to remind our listeners about a conversation we had that kind of spun out of this last year, because you had that situation in, again, the 19th Ward, right, with House of Mercy and that facility that ultimately did not go through. And then you had the
Open Door Mission, not House of Mercy. Oh. It's okay.
Boy, that's the first time anybody has ever confused Open Door and House of Mercy.
I'll go for it.
I said on the way in here that we're spending so much time together here, people are going to begin to talk. Right?
And I said, let them talk.
Let them talk. Yeah.
They do anyway. Right?
Open door Mission. While that was going on, right around the same time, there is an organization called Villa of Hope that offers services for kids who've been at risk, and they have several group homes. They were looking at an East Rochester possible location, and they were met with essentially the same kind of reaction. Yeah. A bunch of people there who said, we love you, we care about you, just not here. And and so we kind of had a program where we said, are we becoming a NIMBY nation, a not-in-my-backyard nation? People who say the right things, but when it comes down to being willing to be open-armed right in your own community, is it do people eventually stop saying the right things at that moment? And so generally speaking, Mike, are you a little more hopeful now than you were months ago? Has it been better? Were you encountering any similar kind of NIMBY attitudes where you think you're going next?
We haven't. You know, I feel a hospitable atmosphere. I hear a more of a how can we help atmosphere, and it's quite refreshing, to say the least.
Well, and once in a while when we talk about these kinds of issues, we have some callers who will come in and they'll say, well, but what are you doing now? So I will just say in full disclosure, so I live in East Rochester and my wife owns a business in East Rochester, and we were the first to say, if the Villa of Hope wants to be there, thumbs up. You know, I want to meet those kids. And so I we're trying to sort of practice what we preach, but I also want to respect the views of people who were concerned. And Mike, did you feel that there were just misunderstandings in the past opposition? Was it some legitimate concerns? How did you view all that?
I think it was a misrepresentation that was propagated from the very start. You know, we wanted to provide a 6 to 9 month supportive housing program for women and children, and folks in the community association, purposely or not, I have my suspicions, kept repeating the word shelter, that it was a transient homeless shelter, that there's going to be drug addicted women and children, just a lot of chaos coming into the community, and I think it was out of context, it was untrue, and it was misrepresentative of what we were trying to tell. And when we would talk to people about what the actual plan was, and they'd say, well, I would be for that, why are we hearing a completely different story? And it was in my opinion, because it was being what we wanted to do was being misrepresented.
Okay, yeah. So most people do have the good hearts and the openness if they've got good information.
I think so. At least we've experienced since that time. Yeah, and I think that you know, we heard it blatantly. You know, we think you're a great organization. We think you do great work. It's desperately needed in this community, but not here. And you know, I don't know what you come up with other than that's just selfishness. And even to the point where, you know, we had designated that 200 of the children that we intended to help were actually from the 19th Ward. They were registered in 19th Ward schools. And that didn't really settle the issue. So it's very discouraging. But we're not discouraged. We just keep going.
Have you raised the money that you need for this?
We're in really good shape, yep, for this, for phase one. Yeah, we're going to raise some more money to continue it, but we've done some feasibility and we've got some pledges, and but we're going to have to come back and finish it up.
And again, help us sort of see it again in peak operating mode, assuming this new long-term residential care facility, right term there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not a shelter. As long as it is operating the way you want, you'll be serving how many people?
This one is a little smaller than we were looking at before. This is going to have 5 to 6 families that we'll start with.
Okay. And let me just ask Anna Valeria Eisman, the director of the Women and Children's Program at the Open Door Mission. And Mike, you can see we're crammed in the studio. You can kick the mic over there to Anna there.
Yeah.
Anna, when it comes to the need in this community for a facility like this, I'm about to branch out the discussion to the other people who are in the studio here who are helping in various ways. What do you see as the need for women and children in particular, women and children in crisis in the city?
There's certainly a need for addressing the uncounted women and children in crisis. And I think that the other women in the room will attest to this, that there is a significant number of women and children who fall into multiple categories, including the working poor, including the couch surfers, and sanctions. There's multiple categories that women and children fall under that means that they're not counted. They're not counted by HUD. They're not counted by social services. They're not counted by the county. When the county puts together these pretty numbers of how we're solving all of these issues, they're missing big, huge numbers. And so this is just a dent. The populations that we're trying to serve really are just putting a little dent in that.
I think the answer is, I can assume what the answer is, but if you are not counted, does mm-hmm. that mean you are potentially missing out on services.
Yes,
or
you're
what
not
are
funded.
Impacts?
Not counted yeah. means not funded.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have to, so that's why, you know, the Open Door mission is, it's a privately funded organization. So we don't have to worry about if you're not funded, we provide the funding.
Okay. Mike, do you want to jump in there too? Go ahead.
Yeah, well, our donors provide the funding. And I mean, like I say, that's the luxury of staying independent is we can help those that otherwise are being missed.
Okay. Well, let me ask our other panelists then about their biggest needs right now. And Sister Grace Miller is here from House of Mercy. And Sister Grace, your own organization over the last, I guess I'm going back, 12, 18 months especially, there have been a lot of discussions on finding a permanent home, people stepping in to help, helping women in crisis, helping people in the homeless community. What are your biggest needs? What's going on right now?
Well, right now we're planning on opening our place on Ormond Street. And we're
a permanent home?
Permanent building for homeless men, women, children, whatever. Men and women, I should say.
Okay.
And we're hoping to have it ready by October, hopefully. We have an architect that's working on it, and we'll be starting a capital campaign soon. So we hope that we'll get the money that we need to get this permanent shelter open.
Where does your funding come from?
Donations, people who like what we're doing, who are sympathetic with our cause. When we launch the capital campaign, we'll be going after business people with money, and we're hoping that we'll get that money. Mostly people who like what we're doing are pleased with the fact that we are helping the homeless and helping to get them on their feet, and the fact that we take in any person, we don't question them. They come in, and we take in the ones that no one else wants. We take in the mentally ill. The police bring homeless people to us. Hospitals send homeless people to us, and we don't refuse anyone. So I think many people like that aspect of it, that we're always open. We're an open shelter, and we believe very strongly in hospitality. And I think many people that like that are willing to donate to us.
Okay, and so the goal would be to open in October for obvious reasons, in advance of the cold season.
And yeah. I think the beauty of this one will be that never again will it be forced to say, okay, on such and such a date, the shelter closes, because we've gone through there too many times. And we're very sympathetic with the homeless who, if they go into a building to get shelter, they have no place to go. They go in during the day, they're put out. And, the temporary shelters that are open, they're put out after a certain date. And that's always heartbreaking. It's very sad when they've been comfortable and being helped, and suddenly they're back out on the streets again. So this Ormond Street will not have any of that. We will work with people until they get on their feet.
Where do they typically go when they have to go out, Sister?
You mean when they're forced out?
Yeah.
Oh, well, last time people were going, getting tents, and they were in hiding. Some of the tents are visible now, but, they're afraid of being arrested by the police. They're afraid that their tents will be destroyed if they're seen. So, they've really gone throughout the city and county, many in hiding places. They don't want to be seen. They don't want to be found. And there are people that go out looking for the homeless that like to see where they are and try to bring them into shelters. And there's been some success with that. But the objective is to help the homeless that are out there, any homeless person that's out there. And, we're talking here about children and women, too, and to see what we can do to get them on their feet, basically. There's housing that we can place them in. And what we're finding is that we have many mentally ill, and we're not getting the help from the institutions. They should be helping us. And that's difficult.
But why? Why would they not be helping?
I don't know. We send people to the hospitals, if they have mental issues, and they're back the same night or 2 days or 3 days later, they're back. And they really haven't been helped. And so we're not going to put them back out again. We'll hold on to them. But that leaves many mentally ill in our shelters.
Mike, you want to jump in there as well?
It's budgeting. They keep cutting back on mental health beds. And, we just lost, I think, 100 beds in Rochester. Right now in Rochester, the way I've read it, there's if you're not a forensic, is the term they use, or, criminally, mentally ill, then you have to find a bed in Syracuse or Buffalo. The only beds we have here on a regular basis are for criminally, mentally ill. And, this is what we see happening is mentally ill individuals, which at any given time, 30 to 40% of the clients that we help at the mission have some type of mental disability. We see the cycle where they get picked up or they go in to check themselves into the emergency room, and the emergency room does a mental hygiene on them, and then they bring them down to the shelter, and then they leave and go back out, and then they get arrested, and it's on this circle from hospital to shelter to jail, from hospital to shelter to jail.
What's going to change this?
We're either going to expand more beds and get better at treating, at helping the mentally ill, or that's a great question, Evan, because they say that they do better in the community. But the community, all the appropriate beds in the community, the whether it's a group home or something like it, have been full or have a 5-year long waiting list. So there is no bed in the community.
Was it always like this?
Well, I believe in the 1975 when they closed the psychiatric center. Mm-hmm. Rochester Psychiatric Center, that they put all the people out, and there were supposed to be organizations that should be helping them, and they weren't there to help them, and so many of them landed on the streets homeless, and now we have their children, you know, that are still out there. So their problem has not been remedied.
And the funding would have to come from, well, if we're going to see government do something about it, the funding would generally come from what source? What level of government would it come from?
The cuts have been made from the federal and state level, both. You know, both federal and state have been cutting closing the institutions, closing the beds, shutting them down, less priority. They do better in the community, but they haven't opened up community beds. Mm-hmm. So it's both.
And HUD's already said that, I was in a meeting 2 weeks ago, that they're not going to fund any more transitional after 2017. I mean, he was pretty direct about it.
Can I add to that? There's one of the issues that I've seen over the years, as having been a case manager, is trying to place individuals in transitional housing. Not only are those beds being cut, but oftentimes folks who are dealing with mental illness, you know, you stop taking your meds, or you lose funding, and you don't get your meds for a little while. You begin to self-medicate. So there's oftentimes, many, many times, it's co-occurring. So there's mental illness and substance abuse going on at the same time. And I've sat in meetings where, you know, I've tried to place someone in a mental health apartment, for example. But the mental health, and the, you know, I'm trying to place him in the mental health apartment. Folks are on one side saying, well, he's got a chemical dependency issue, so we can't service that. And then the chemical dependency folks are on the other end of the table saying, well, he's got a mental illness, so we can't, we're not equipped to handle that either. So there's this, literally, it's like watching a game of ping pong because of folks that are dealing with, you know, both of these issues. And as cuts to transitional beds are happening, because we're saying, we'll just place them in housing immediately, but they're not ready for that housing. So it's a vicious cycle that will continue.
This sounds to me like the most, we talk in this country so often about mental health, but we do it in this way that I think is not very serious. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes there will be a mass shooting or something and everyone will throw up their hands and say, well, we really need better mental health services. Mm-hmm. And then we kind of just walk away from it, and that's all. And now what we're finally getting here is a real picture of what happens when you have inadequate mental health services. And again, it probably comes from different levels of government or different community priorities, but I guess it just seems that this is something that we have to decide to fix, because otherwise you end up in this cycle, right? You'll see the same people. You'll see the same people. You'll see the same people. Sister Grace, mm-hmm. You want to jump in?
Well, you know, I think we have in our community a very serious problem with children who are suffering mental abuse at homes. Mm-hmm. And that issue hasn't really been addressed by the county, not seriously by the county. And this is why we have children not going to school. Because they aren't in homes where the parents are making sure they go to school, and so they're not getting their education. And the mental abuse that many of them go through, I think, is really a more serious issue than people in this community realize. And I think that's an issue that needs to be addressed by government, by the county. It's really heartbreaking when you see what some children in our community are going through. And many of them are not going to school because no one is there to tell them in the household to go to school. And so they're lagging behind. Next thing you know, they're the ones that are out in the streets. And we're trying all that we can to help children so they don't end up on the streets with guns in their hands, you know, and killing and that kind of thing. But that's become a very serious problem that really has not been addressed.
That's the population that we specifically think needs the help, because they're not counted. They're under a roof. HUD doesn't count them. You know, in a lot of these instances, it's generational. You know, grandma was 17 when she had mom, and mom was 15 when she had this child, and neither one of them ever had healthy parenting modeled, and they don't value education. The kids aren't expected to go to school. And, oh, by the way, it's happened, you know, on a very violent corner, and the kids, when they do go out and play, there's bullets flying, and there's mm-hmm. and there's drug needles all over the place, and the things that these children see would put you down horizontal for a month. And it's true. It's yeah. It's if we don't, that's what we felt. If someone doesn't act on behalf of these children, we're going to long for the good old days when we had a 44% graduation rate, because these kids aren't going to make it through elementary school.
And many of the children are afraid to speak about their problems, their issues. And so they keep them boiled up inside them, and then it becomes even more difficult for them. So I just think something needs to be done in this community to take care of our children.
Anna, you want to jump in one more time?
Real quick. You know, one of the things that we've been, you know, as we've been preparing for this women's program is that, you know, I think we say sort of in speaking about the education issue, you know, children growing up in poverty and who are dealing with these crises, you know, their families don't value education. And I think sometimes, and this is a sort of a conviction of mine that I've been having, that I have, you know, had to kind of come to terms with, is that I don't know that it necessarily means that mom doesn't value education, but when you're being forced to survive couch to couch, you don't know where your meals are coming from, you're battling depression, or you're battling domestic violence or alcohol abuse or something, your focus is your inner turmoil is then, you know, relayed to your children. And it's not an excuse by any means. It's just a way I think we need to be better at understanding where these moms are coming from. And that are, you know, one of the basis, the pillars of the program that we're trying to start is that we want to get mom to be in a stable position where she can actually get to know her kids and understand where their values are and their strengths are. Hasn't had a chance to before.
I'll never forget being at the one of the first times I was covering a case at the Hall of Justice, and this is years ago now, seeing a beautiful little toddler, an African-American boy, with sort of this glassy-eyed look, holding the hand of a relative, I think a grandparent, walking through the Hall of Justice, probably not really knowing what's going on. And the person I was standing next to, and I won't say who it was, but said, look at that beautiful child. What's going to become of them? I feel so bad. And then, a minute later, saying about that child's parent, oh, that animal needs to be put away. Blah, you know. And then you go, the person you just described in that way used to be that little boy. And that's just immediately connect to what Anna was saying. So let's get a short break, and I want to talk to Reverend Aaron and Melody Wakacha about what's going on at Zion House and their needs as well. It's our chance to hear from various members of our community about what is going on, serving homeless populations, serving women and children, and what their needs are as we move into the spring, into the summer, and already, again, looking ahead to next winter. So you heard House of Mercy say they're trying to raise money for this permanent facility. They'd like it open by October. They're working on it. You heard House of Mercy say Mike Hennessy didn't break any news on a location yet, but they're close on a suburban location for a long-term residential care facility to help out as well. So these things are going on, and we'll talk to the Zion House after this short break on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we talk to a Rochester native, Todd Moss, who now works in Washington, D.C. as the COO of the Center for Global Development. He went to Cuba before the president did, to see what the country looks like up close as we begin the thaw of relations. He wrote about it. He joins us to tell us. Then we talk to the ambassador from Mali to the United States about building a relationship with our countries and Rochester. Talk with you next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the University of Rochester's Institute of Performing Arts, announcing an original pop rock musical version of Brecht's Mother, Courage and Her Children, April 7th through 23rd. Tickets at sas.rochester.edu/performingarts.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. You think we don't bring people together? I mean, now Mike Hennessy and Sister Grace are like bosom buddies now because of Connections. And they're so close that I confused their organizations earlier this hour, which is a remarkable thing. The Open Door Mission and House of Mercy represented, as well as Zion House, and Reverend Kelly Ayers here from Zion House. And if you missed it earlier this hour, Zion House was founded when, Reverend?
In 2010.
Okay, 2010, and you're serving. Well, why don't you tell us about the mission, first of all?
We started in 2010. We are what's called a grant per diem provider from the VA, which means we get a small stipend per day per veteran. Unfortunately, that only pays about 30% of our budget. So we have gotten creative, and I am constantly busy going around trying to bring awareness and therefore begging for money, really. sure. Let's be honest. 'Cause it is hard. And female veterans just, we're finding that a lot of female veterans who are in crisis either don't know that they're eligible for benefits, have gone elsewhere for benefits, to a, you know, like a county system or domestic violence system, or they're just afraid to go to the VA because it's a male institution. And so it's been a struggle to get the word out. You know, it's estimated that there's around 2,000 to 3,000 homeless female veterans across upstate New York. But yet the VA will tell you they're struggling to find those folks. And right now the women's services in the VA are 85% underutilized. And so clearly the message is not getting out there.
Well, Melody Wakacha is a Zion House graduate. Is that right, Melody?
Yes, sir.
Well, tell me about your own story, because you know, I think you're exactly the kind of person Reverend Ayers is talking about here. Tell me about, well, why don't you take it back as far as you want. Tell us your story here.
Well, in 2013, in January, I became homeless. I was told to hit the bricks one too many times. So I just packed up my bags and started walking. This is down in Alabama, close to the Florida line.
Is that where you're from originally?
Well, I'm originally from California, but I lived in the South since 1997.
Okay.
I had served the Army for 15 years, active 3 years, 12 years Army Reserves and National Guard. I was told when I left active duty that I was not entitled to VA help because I was not medical, you know, injured during the time I was active duty. So during that time, I'm saying, okay, I don't have VA help. But in 2013, I became homeless and started hiking. And I got myself up to North Carolina.
Where were you going? Where did you intend to go?
Anywhere I can go. I can find shelter. I live with my sister until something inappropriate happened. And that's me. I'll leave in a hot minute. Don't think my actions through. I'd leave in a hot minute. And got up to Hickory. Then I says, no, I got him homeless then, was told a month before I could have all my money up for my apartment because we had already agreed September 5th would be my moving day out, and it was August 5th that on my calendar wrote move. So I just...
And this was 2013?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And where'd you go then?
I was heading to New York City. Because then I knew that I probably could find some help because there was nothing down south.
Mm-hmm.
There was transportation. But then my cousins had heard, no, you can't go. Come to Addison. Get down to Addison. There was nothing there. There's no shelter that I'd go to. I couldn't stay with my cousins or my aunts. So they said, well, try the VA. So they took me up to Bath VA.
To Bath VA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Bath VA says, okay, we can get you to Canandaigua Dom, but it's going to be a few weeks. But thank goodness they got me in there 3 days.
And this is still 2013, Melody?
Yeah. When okay. I come in, I came in you in September.
Okay. Okay.
And then I happened to heard about Zion House because one of their case managers had went to a festival and came across the Bodega line. And so they had told me about Zion House.
And that's our social enterprise. We make all natural goat's milk, lotions, and soaps.
Okay.
And I got into the Zion House, and I've been there for a year and a half. And now I got my apartment. And I still continue to volunteer for the Zion House because I believe in their mission. Because I never knew about what services I could get. So if I didn't have a child, mostly if you had had a child, either a child or you have an addiction. Well, I had neither. All I had was mental illness. And they weren't willing to help with that. But VA, I will give credit to VA. They are helping me now, got my medicine straight out. But like I always tell Mother Kelly, that's what we know her as, Mother Kelly, that it wasn't for the Zion House, I'd still be under a bridge.
So you lived in the Zion House for
a year and a half.
How were the accommodations there?
I loved it. We each got our own room. We did not have to share with anybody else. It was our own room, our own safety. We get pissed off with, excuse my language, but we get pissed off with the other girls there, up the door, upstairs, and into our room, and don't have to be bothered by anybody.
Were you safe there? Did you feel safe there?
Yes.
Okay.
And if there's any problem, we'd call Mother Kelly right away. Mother Kelly was within there within 2 minutes. So.
And Melody, you know, every organization has a little bit of a different approach to how firm you want to be for eventually getting help, either maybe looking for work, things like that. What was your process? You know, were you on a timeline to do anything, to job search, to what any of that? And I know Mother Kelly can jump in as well, but.
That was not pressured. You worked at your own time, okay. Your own ability. You know, their main goal was first, let's take care of our head first. Because if you don't take care of your head, you're not going to be able to go anywhere
else. Sort of get stable.
Stable. Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel, you know, that's what the transitional home should be. Mm-hmm. Them throwing the people out into an apartment is not going to help help them at all. Because they're going to be in the same people, the same friends. So where they're not going to get the support as what Zion House had done for me as far as
they could have given you a bag of money and keys to an apartment, and that actually probably would not have helped you. Right.
Because if something upset me, what would I do, Mother Kelly?
She would try to run. But there was a couple times I had to twist her arm to keep her steady. Yeah.
Three times. I had my bags packed.
Thankfully, she came to me when she was in that kind of distress, and I was able to talk her off the ledge because, she's been a wonderful asset to us. Because that's always been our hope, that our graduates would stay connected and then give to the future, to the future residents. Because there's all in the veteran world, I'm sure in the secular world is where there's a lot of shame that comes with being homeless and needing to ask for that kind of help. I see that a lot. But one of the things we wanted to do was to make it look like a house. I mean, you can drive down Avon, and we don't have a big sign out front that says, "Hey, this is Zion House," with neon blinking lights. It's not like that. You wouldn't know where it's at. In Avon, I mean, it's one of the safest places, heck, I think in the world, especially right now. Which is wonderful because all of our ladies have some type of post-traumatic stress. All of our residents have some type of military sexual trauma. They have real issues with hypervigilance and let's be real, being scared where they're at. And, Avon is, even I have suffered post-traumatic stress and military sexual trauma, and I have not ever felt unsafe in Avon, which has always been a gift. And we were mindful that these ladies have these issues. Having a little bit of privacy can go a long way to help stabilization. And so having their own bedroom with, a lock that they can lock. Yeah. I mean, granted, I have a master key, but I will never use that. Unless there's an emergency. Mm-hmm. I used to live in the space, actually. I used to live in the attic. I felt like Quasimodo, which reduced my response time tremendously to any kind of crisis. But now I live within walking distance, which is perfect. They know not to call unless there's a real crisis. But they also know that if it's a real crisis, I don't care when they call me.
Okay. Well, Melody, what did it take for you to graduate? What were the things that had to happen for you to feel that stabilization, that security in your own life, to sort of feel like you're moving ahead now?
Well, first of all, I was to get my depression under control. Mm-hmm. That was the main thing.
And how did you do that?
I'm just going to VA, going to my appointments, getting psychiatric help, and they made sure that I go. I could not miss appointments.
Are you taking medication?
Yes.
Are you staying on medication? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And that's...
And we take care of the transportation. That's part of our responsibility. But I also think becoming part of a greater community, there in Avon. We're connected. Zion House is a mission of Zion Episcopal Church. Religion is not required, even though I think it's incredibly important to healing. It's not required. But the folks at the church, they really just want a chance to show a lot of love to these ladies. And if they let them, the relationships, like she still goes shopping every Thursday with an older couple who are kind of like the grandparents of the house. Those are the kind of connections that some of our veterans don't have. But now they've got this new extended family that they never imagined.
All right, so you're building these relationships. You're staying on medication. You're going to the appointments that you needed to go to. Mm-hmm. So the first thing you did was you took care of that depression. You start building these relationships, and then what?
Then we start focusing on finding a place to live, where I want to live. And I wanted to stay in Avon, and knock on wood, I did find an apartment. Wonderful landlord. That's really supported what Design House did, so they kind of took me in. Mm-hmm. And
we also got you a therapy dog.
Got
a little
companion
dog.
Can't forget about Rusty.
Rusty's her lifeline. And finding a landlord who was willing, because there's a difference between a service animal and like a companion therapy dog. You against the law to prohibit service, but not necessarily therapy. And so finding a landlord who was willing to allow for that.
Okay, so you're able to do that. And how long have you been in the apartment?
Almost a year.
Almost
about
a year?
About to sign up a lease. In fact, Thursday I go in for an inspection. They got to come in their yearly inspection I have to do. Mm-hmm. And after the inspection, I can sign my lease again. So.
Is this the first time in a while that you've had a year or more in the same apartment on your own? I mean, when's the last time you were kind of feeling that stable? Was it 2010, 2013?
Oh, gosh, no, way back. 2008.
Okay. All right, so this
is the last time.
This is a big year for you. Mm-hmm. Big year. And what about work or anything else? I mean, have you been able to do that?
Well, I have no transportation. That's one problem.
Absolutely.
I have.
And that's a very common challenge. Absolutely.
And the bus system to Avon to Rochester is what, 6 o'clock in the morning? Then 6 o'clock back. So it's not feasible, to even job-wise, to even find a job here in Rochester and in Avon, jobs aren't there that I'm able to do.
Yeah.
So you're volunteering at Zion House,
yes.
Right? But
it keeps me busy. It keeps me out of my head.
Sure. But eventually, I mean, will you move if you can't find a way to work? Will you try to work?
I will if it's available. I'm able to. But right now we're working on my disability. But like I said, I still volunteer. I got to keep out of my head. Mm-hmm. So get me out of the house so I'm not thinking. So I do volunteer a lot, many hours, just to keep me out of my head.
And she does workforce development hours through the county.
Mm-hmm.
And we're her placement for that. And so it's not completely voluntary, but we're glad that she's with us. She's a wonderful addition.
I only have to do 13, but I'm pulling in 30.
Right.
Well, let me just, before I get a few comments from listeners on Twitter who've been listening all hour, I've been asking these organizations, Reverend, what their biggest needs are coming out of the winter, going through the rest of this year, whether it's new facilities, raising money for a permanent facility. What's your biggest need at Zion?
One of my biggest dreams and visions is to purchase another property. It came out a couple weeks ago that I would love to get to Avon Inn in Avon. It's currently for sale. Because I would like to see our social enterprise expanded, and as well as having permanent supportive housing, and that we would be able to do both of those in the Avon Inn. Plus, it really is within walking distance to the church where our offices are, and ideally broaden our scope to not only our homeless female veterans, but any veteran who needs help and any other at-risk group that could use supportive permanent housing and supportive work. I mean, that's also important. A lot of our residents have either mental health or traumatic brain injury, and working a secular job, a full-time secular job, is just not possible. And so that's one of the reasons I developed the social enterprise that we have, the Boudica Spa products, because any level of ability can be accommodated. We mm-hmm. can find something for that person to do, whether it's putting labels on bottles to actually making the product products. And putting it in the bottles, so that they feel like they, they have purpose again. Mm-hmm. They're not worthless. Mm-hmm. They can do something for the greater good, kind of thing.
Well, a couple of comments from our listeners online just about some of the cycles we've been talking about. Chelsea says, sadly, the cycle of mentally ill moving from the hospital to the jail to a shelter to the street is not just a local phenomenon. It's happening nationally. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's true. And Mark writes to us and just says, pull up the email, just said, it sounds awful. That giving someone the keys to an apartment wouldn't be enough, but of course it wouldn't when they've gone through so much trauma. But how are we going to get to where we've got a much better record at success with this? Is there housing available, and what is it going to take to make it work? Well, at Open Door Mission, Mike and Anna, you see a lot of, how many men a year are you serving right now, Mike?
About 14,000 bed nights, between 1,000 men, yeah.
Sure, right. So, When you see the success stories that you do, and mm-hmm. Not everyone who walks in is going to have an overnight success story or an over month or whatever. But what does it take to get someone into a place that they are going to feel like, I can stay here, I'm going to make this work?
I really liked that you asked a question about a bag of money in an apartment, and the Reverend said that it would be a trigger for relapse, and often it is. Resources in a free apartment can be a trigger for relapse. Mm-hmm. So, and that's all about what Housing First is about. The mission has always been about Housing Next. Mm-hmm. Let us stabilize mm-hmm. your life.
Right.
The 40 men I have in my shelter right now came from an apartment, and they mm-hmm. weren't able to navigate the regs and mm-hmm. requirements to stay in an apartment, or they'd be in the one they left. So we need to get that life stabilized. Mm-hmm. We need to deal with the addiction and the depression and the drama. Mm-hmm. Not the drama, the
trauma.
There's always drama in it.
No, trauma.
But the trauma.
Trauma, yeah.
Amen.
Yeah.
There's drama and trauma always. Right. And mm-hmm. and deal with that. And when you get stable, like this young lady did, then she's ready for an apartment. And I don't think that'll ever change. That's human nature.
Right.
And if you do get into an apartment with several others that are in the same boat, it can mm-hmm. devolve very quickly. And where now it's not even a safe place, and they're back in the shelters to escape the housing. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot more. It's more complex than just resources in an apartment.
Okay, Sister Grace.
Yeah, one of the things that Melanie said was when she was in this room, she had free space. It was her place. She had time to think, and she was happy there. She found her happiness there. And I think that's true with so many of our homeless. You say put them in housing, get them into an apartment. Many of them are not ready, and they need time. And that's what we mm-hmm. are about, trying to give them time so they can prepare themselves for an apartment and only go into the apartment when they're ready. And many homeless are not ready to go into an apartment immediately or into a house immediately. They need time, and that's what we try to do, work with them as long as it takes. Until they're ready to make that step. Mm-hmm. And what struck me with Melanie was the free space. It was your own space. Mm-hmm. And it reminds me of, when the tents were being demolished recently at Sanctuary Village.
Two Decembers ago.
Yeah. One of the men that was there and his tent was demolished. He said to me, when he had the tent, he said, I would go take walks. But I always knew that I had my space, my place to come to. And I could do I'd be alone, but I could think and I could, plan. So, the free space that they need to pull themselves together mm-hmm. until they're ready to make that move. And that's what we've been trying to say with the chronic homeless. They need time, and we need to afford them that time. And that's what we at the House of Mercy, I know you try to do, give them that time.
All right, I've got 90 seconds left. Let's do 30 seconds each and finish the hour with this way. If it's a successful year, for each of your organizations, what changes when we come back a year from now? What's new And how do you get there? 30 seconds apiece. Mike and Anna, what's new with Open Door Mission? You're almost there, you said, with the long-term care facility, right?
Yeah, I think for us, you know, I said earlier that we're in a good spot to launch the campaign. You're going to hear more about our fundraising endeavors as that becomes more public. I think in the meantime, and we and God willing, we will be serving women and children before next school year. So pray for that. Pray that we will be able to help those that are not being helped right now. I would just say this quickly that, you know, expanding services like that, and Sister Grace will attest to this, can put a strain on your present operations. You know, we got to keep our shelter running. We got to keep our addiction recovery program running. We have to do all this and expand a program that, you know, quite frankly, has almost $500,000 of annual operating budget. So, give to the House of Mercy, to the Open Door Mission, and give to Zion House, because the it's getting critical out there.
Okay. And Sister Grace, for you guys, if it goes well by October, you're open before next winter with the permanent facility.
It'll be a great joy.
Ormond Street,
right. It'll be a great joy for the homeless and for us. And we'll be able to take care of so many more homeless at Ormond Street.
I promise we'll keep checking in Zion.
Zion has a successful year. Well, for me, it looks like successful fundraising. We have a Cork and Canvas fundraiser coming up in April 17th. You can find tickets on our website.
Which is, what's the website? Go ahead.
ZionHouseAvon.org, www.ZionHouseAvon.org. And that'll be April 17th at the Harrow East. It's a silent auction and wine and tasting and all that kind of mess. and then we have a golf tournament in the spring. But raising enough money not only to meet our operating expenses, but if not the Avon Inn, another property that we can expand our social enterprise and broaden who we help.
And Melody, another successful year means stable, not
and
running.
My
stay where there you are. Congratulations to you. Nice
Thank
talking.
You.
Thanks for sharing your story. Reverend, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to our guests from the Open Door Mission and the House of Mercy.
Thank you.
Sister
Seven.
Mike,
thank you
Anna,
so
thank you. Short break, more connections next.